Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming a Latter-day Smedley butler, author John Perkins.
Thank you. Thanks. It's great to be with you all tonight and to be in one of the last remaining independent bookselling stores. My God, it's wonderful to be here. Thank you, Powell's. Thank all of you. We're in very, very special time in history. I think one of the things that I'm struck by is how this economic crisis that we're going through is not a fluke. It had to happen because we've created a failed system. And I'm going to talk about that in a few minutes. But first, I'd like to start tonight by doing something I have never, ever, ever done before at one of these talks or at any talk, and that is read from my own book. You know, people, when I first started doing this, people at the bookstore said, well, you're doing a reading. I said, I'm doing what? And they said, well, we'd like you to come to our bookstore and read from your book. And I said, do the people who come to your bookstore, are they not able to read? So I never have done this all the years, and I think this is like my fourth time at Powell's, and I certainly have never done it here. Although I had been an economic hitman for nearly 7 years, I did not understand the profound implications of the system I was perpetuating until 1978. My job at the time was to convince Panama's chief of government, Omar Torrijos, to assume a huge World Bank loan. Bankrupting his country would assure U.S. control over the canal, despite the recent treaties returning it to Panama, and guarantee that our corporations would be awarded lucrative construction contracts. It was a classic economic hitman scam to corrupt a leader, make him rich, and place his country in a position where we could exploit it mercilessly. But Omar was not buying. I don't need your damn money, Juanito, he said one afternoon. We were speaking Spanish. He and I were standing on the deck of a luxurious sailing yacht that was docked at Contadora Island, a safe haven where U.S. politicians and corporate executives enjoyed sex and drugs away from the prying eyes of the international press and their wives. Omar leaned against the polished mahogany railing and gave me his most charming smile. I got a fine house. Plenty of good food, fast cars, a friend who lends me this yacht. He straightened and spread his arms to embrace the cockpit where several of his closest male advisors shared rum cocktails with half a dozen bikini-clad young women. Just about everything a man could want. Then he frowned, except one thing. He went on to tell me that his goal was to set his people free from Yankee shackles, to make sure his country controlled the canal, and to help Latin America liberate itself from the very thing I represented, and he referred to as predatory capitalism. You know, he added, what I'm suggesting will ultimately benefit your children, too. He explained that the system I was promoting, where a few exploited the many, was doomed. The same as the old Spanish Empire, it will implode, he said. He took a drag off his Cuban cigar and exhaled the smoke slowly, like a man blowing a kiss. Unless you and I and all our friends fight the predatory capitalists, he warned, the global economy will go into shock. He glanced across the water at the sandy beach and palm trees of Contadora and then back at me. No permitas que te engañan, he said. Don't allow yourself to be hoodwinked. And then he went on to tell me that I was being hoodwinked and I was hoodwinking other people. And just, I'm going to read just a little bit more here. I'm just kind of getting into this. It's a lot easier than just standing up here and speaking. This is good writing, you know? I am convinced that Omar's attempts to change the system cost him his life. He died when his private plane crashed in June 1981, an incident that much of the international press labeled as a CIA assassination. Although I was stunned when I learned the tragic news, I was not surprised. I had feared for many months that if he did not succumb to economic hitmen efforts to corrupt him, the jackals would get him, just as they had Mohammad Mossadegh of Iran, Jacobo Arbenz of Guatemala, Sukarno of Indonesia, Lumumba of the Congo, Allende of Chile, Roldos of Ecuador, and so many others before him. So that pretty much describes what I did as an economic hitman. Omar was one of the few that resisted me, would not allow himself to be corrupted. Jaime Roldos of Ecuador was another one that wouldn't allow themselves to be corrupted. My job was basically to identify countries that have resources our corporations covet, like oil or a canal, and then convince the leaders to accept huge loans. And with those loans from the World Bank or sister organizations, they had to hire our corporations. Wow. Don't talk too much about this stuff because you'll be drowned out. With these loans, they had to hire our corporations to build big infrastructure projects in their country, like power plants and industrial parks that would help a few rich families as well as our corporations, but not benefit the majority of the people who didn't have the money to buy electricity or get jobs in industrial parks. But the people would be left holding a huge debt, so big they couldn't possibly repay it. And so at some point we go back and say, since you can't repay your debts, give us a pound of flesh, sell your oil real cheap to our oil companies, vote with us on a critical United Nations vote, or send troops in support of ours to some place like Iraq. And when we failed, which didn't happen very often, I think I had a higher failure rate than most. I failed with both Roldos of Ecuador and Torrijos of Panama. The jackals would come in and either overthrow the government or assassinate the leader. And in that way, we've really created this world global empire, the first truly global empire in the history of the world, and it's been created primarily without the military through these techniques that I mentioned. And so it's also come home to roost. We've implemented the same sorts of things here in this country in recent years. You know, it's just one example. The same technique of convincing these countries to accept these big loans, our bankers have convinced us to accept loans that we can't pay, basically. You know, so somebody who can afford a $300,000 house is told by the bankers, you should buy a $600 house. I was told this when I was buying a house a number of years ago. You should buy a $600 house. And even though you can't really quite afford it, just tighten your belt for a few years, because that $600,000 house is going to be worth twice that in 5 years. That's what people were told, many, many people. And of course, the bottom fell out of the market, and now these same people, these same bankers that convinced us to buy those houses, are buying them up on the cheap out there. They're buying all the best ones anyway. And today we're being told, just today I heard, we're coming out of the recession. GDP is growing. Well, GDP may be growing because the people on Wall Street are paying each other huge bonuses and investing that in some things that are increasing GDP or GNP. But the fact of the matter is, we've got the highest unemployment rate we've had in a quarter of a century. Our bankruptcy rate just increased by 32% over last year. Foreclosures are the highest they've ever been in my lifetime. You know, if you're not one of the very rich, you're not out of the recession.